From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. Idaho Matters has a new project to answer your questions about voting in the upcoming midterm elections. It's part of America Amplified, an initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to support community engagement journalism in public media. Here's what you have to do. Go to BoiseStatePublicRadio.org and submit your questions right there, or you can text Boise State PR to 855-670-1777. Just follow the prompts, and then you can get your question put in that way. We will be answering your questions every Tuesday right here on Idaho Matters. So to help us answer this week's question, we've invited Boise State Public Radio reporter James Dawson and Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun to join us. Hi to both of you.
Hi, Gemma.
Hey, Gemma.
Okay, so we got a few questions from listeners this week about the upcoming November election. So here are the questions. Number one, who is responsible for the voter advisory on the ballot? Number two, how did it get on the ballot, especially when the legislature is trying to eliminate voter initiatives? So the question mixes several distinctly different topics. So I guess the first question is info available? Those are the questions, all right? We will get to each of those questions. But first, I just want to start out with the basics. Which one of you would like to answer this question? What is a voter advisory?
That's a great question. I can start and then Jimmy can come in behind and kind of clean up where I mess up. But I'm glad we're taking a few minutes to talk about this today because it is a little confusing and because there's information that we can share that's not on the ballot that I think will help Idahoans understand what this is. The most important thing to know, this is a non-binding advisory question. And so whatever way Idahoans vote, it's not going to pass or repeal anything. And it's actually asking about action that the legislature already took and completed during the September 1st special session of the legislature this year. And it's really asking Idahoans whether or not they approve or disapprove of the big, massive special session law, House Bill 1, that was passed in September. But that doesn't say that on the ballot. And so it's a little bit confusing. But an advisory question, it's a non-binding question that on its face is seemingly asking for the people, for the voters to weigh in on whether or not they support something. But it's not to repeal something. It's not to pass something. It's a non-binding question. And I think that's the most important thing to get to at the end of the day. But I'll let James take over and sit back and see how I did.
Yeah, no, I think you did well, Clark. Basically, how I kind of think of it, and I'm not trying to be flip, but it just reminds me of, like, you know, the middle school note that you pass your crush saying, "Do you like me? Yes or no?" And so you know, it's essentially
no, that's
like
a great way to describe it, Jimmy.
Right. So it's like, okay, we cut taxes by hundreds of millions of dollars. We're investing more than $400 million into education spending with this tax cut and spending plan. And basically, you know, do you like what we already did, you know, several months ago, you know, by the time people get into the ballot box? And so, like Clark said, it, you know, whichever way people want to vote in, you know, at the ballot box with their absentee ballot, it's not going to have any sort of effect on what has already taken place. Could it inform, you know, what might happen in the future and how that money's allocated? Sure. But it's certainly not going to have an immediate effect.
So, Clark, I think you have the language of that advisory question, the voter advisory, in front of you. Can you read it? And this is why. I know we have a lot of folks who have, you know, absentee voted, so they've seen the language. But if you're showing at the polls come November 8th, 2 weeks from tomorrow, you may not have seen this, and it may be confusing.
Yeah, it is confusing. And we can talk more about the language itself, because I think there's some things about the language that that do make it confusing. And we can talk a little bit about where this came from and why it's on the ballot. But yeah, if you haven't got your absentee ballot yet, or if you're planning to vote in person, you may not have seen this yet, but it's going to appear on your ballot as Idaho advisory question. And I'll just start reading it word for word. It's two paragraphs and then another sentence behind that. So it'll take just a few seconds here, but you'll be looking for Idaho advisory question. And then it says, quote, do you approve or disapprove of the state of Idaho using the record budget surplus to refund $500 million back to hardworking Idaho taxpayers, cut ongoing income taxes by more than $150 million, and put more money in our classrooms by increasing education and student funding by a record $410 million? Your approval of this effort would combat historic inflation by returning money to the taxpayers, creating a simple flat tax, and making the single largest investment in public education in Idaho history. As a voter, your ballot will ask you whether you approve or disapprove. And so that's the language you'll see on the question. That's the Idaho advisory question.
Okay. So with that said, though, Clark, I mean, unless you absolutely understand what an advisory question is and that there's no action that's going to be taken, this actually sounds like you are approving or disapproving, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for potential educational funding.
It does very much sound that way. And it's even more confusing because I think a lot of Idahoans will remember the education ballot initiative question, the Quality Education Act that Reclaim Idaho organizers and volunteers qualified for the ballot and then withdrew from the ballot this summer. But all this stuff gets kind of tangled together, but you're absolutely right. There's nothing on the question that indicates that it's not binding or that this has essentially already happened. That language is missing from the ballot. It doesn't even reference the special session or allude to it in any way. It doesn't talk about House Bill 1 or the new law. So it's really bizarre, but Idaho advisory questions are very rare anyways. I went through the online elections information that's available through the Idaho Secretary of State's office. And I went through 28 years worth of election results from 1994 to 2022. And I just found two times in the last 28 years where there were advisory questions on the ballot. So it's not something Idahoans are used to seeing. It happens rarely. It's non-binding. I think there's some information that could have been added to that that would make it a little bit more clear to Idahoans on what exactly they're voting for and the fact that it is non-binding. So it's super confusing, and happy to get into it at a deeper level too. And I'll let James take over.
Well, James, can we actually also talk about within the language of this, as one listener pointed out, the question is asking like kind of a mixed bag of things, right? I mean, we talked about the education aspect of it, but it also talks about tax rebates, income tax cuts. So why put a mishmash of things in this big question?
I can't answer the why specifically, aside from the fact that, I mean, that's just what the legislature and Governor Brad Little, accomplished in September. As far as, the question that you're asking, it's interesting because that's kind of what got brought up in that special session as heartburn for a lot of lawmakers, some of whom ended up voting for it anyway, but basically saying that, you know, why are we voting on this one bill that has so much, in it that touch on so many different topics, which, was argued that it could be unconstitutional because in Idaho, you have to have a single subject on a bill. But, you know, as to why the question contains all of those things, tax cuts, rebates, and more school funding, those are all very popular things, not just in Idaho, but across the country. And, if people overwhelmingly say, yes, we approve of this, then they have more ground, I think, to say, look at the great job we did back in the special session, and this is what you can look forward to, in the coming couple years after this election.
Jimmy, yeah, go ahead, Clark.
I was going to say that's really interesting. I talked with a political scientist named David Adler, who's the president of the Alturas Institute in Idaho Falls and who's taught constitutional law and government at Idaho Public universities. But yeah, he said that in his mind, this is about essentially Republicans in the Idaho legislature asking voters to pat them on the back for something that's already happened, when in fact it was Reclaim Idaho that did the hard work of building support for education funding in the first place. But James is exactly right. The reason that there's, you know, seemingly two or three different things lumped together in one question is because that's the bill. That's the law that was passed during the special session. And one of your questions, Jimma, was how did this get on the ballot and where did the language come from? It was actually part of that law from the special session. The very, like the last page or the second to last page of that law, back on page 14 of that law, said this advisory question will be put on the November ballot. It specified the language that I read to you a couple of minutes ago. When I reached out to the governor's office, I talked to Madison Hardy, the governor's press secretary, and she said that language was agreed upon between the governor's office and the legislators who co-sponsored that law in the weeks leading up to the September 1 special session. So that's where it came from, and that's why it's on the ballot. And there are a lot of questions about this, but I mentioned when I talked to that political scientist, David Adler, and I think, Jimmy, you were asking about some of the language in the advisory question, but it talks about, quote, hardworking Idaho taxpayers. It talks about record budget surplus. It talks about historic inflation. And when I talked to David Adler and some other folks, they thought that this wasn't neutral language. They thought that this was language that was intended to persuade a voter into supporting it. And you know, it sort of makes sense if you think about it. Why wouldn't I support giving the hardworking Idaho taxpayers their money back? Why wouldn't I support a record increase in education funding? And so a couple people have flagged the language saying it's not neutral. It does tend to be persuasive. And there's no like sort of other side to it either. So that is something that's definitely been flagged by several people. The language in itself, which again is language that came from the law, from the special session, language that the legislators and the governor's staff worked out before the special session. But yeah, there's some concerns that maybe that's not if the concern would be if the legislature was really interested in how the public thought about this, maybe the language should be more neutral, and maybe it should have been written by an outside third party, say someone from the attorney general's office or something like that. But that did not happen here. It was written by the people that wrote and supported the law itself. And there's folks that are saying it appears to be persuasive language as opposed to neutral language.
And Jimmy, you know, your thoughts on that. I mean, could this language like hardworking Idaho and historic inflation be problematic in the reporting that you've done?
I don't know if it could be problematic, but I mean, as Clark said, it's persuasive. And I think something important to note here is that, you know, these advisory questions are rare, and they come, as far as I know, just from the state legislature. If they pass something like that, wanting to check on voters' opinions, which doesn't have the same requirements as ballot initiatives, which you have the pro side that's running the ballot initiative writes, in the state issued voter guide by the Secretary of State, they have their case for it. And then the Secretary of State goes out and finds an opposition group and finds a rebuttal for it. But there's no such requirement for that for an advisory question. So, I think that's important to keep in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. So one listener wanted to know why the question is on the ballot, especially when lawmakers have been making it harder to get citizen initiatives on the ballot. So do we have an answer as to why this is on the ballot?
Well, it's a good question. This is different than a citizen's ballot initiative. Citizen's ballot initiative is essentially the people of Idaho bypassing the legislature to write their own laws, whereas a referendum would be kind of the opposite, whether they approve or disapprove of an existing law. So it's different from a citizen's initiative because this does not involve the citizens at all. This came straight from the legislature and the governor's office. And so it's similar in the fact that it's a question, but it's, I think the legislature's resistance to initiatives and referendums has a lot to do with the legislature wanting to retain all the power that it can to write state laws and to legislate. And so I think the legislature was sort of guarding its own power when they cracked down on the initiative process and passed laws that make it more complicated and difficult to qualify an initiative for the ballot. So seemingly a similar type thing, but the source is totally different. This goes around the citizens. They're not involved whatsoever. Mm. And so I think one way to look at that would be the legislature wanting to guard its power. And we hear legislators talk all the time about the strength and power of the legislative branch and not being subservient to the executive branch or the judicial branch. This is something we hear conservative Republican legislators talk about all the time on the House floor and committee hearings. And so I do agree that they have passed laws and made it more difficult to pursue citizen ballot initiatives. But again, this is something that originated from the legislature, of the legislature's doing. And so it's not quite, it seems similar, but it's not quite the same, if that makes sense. And yeah. I'll see if Jimmy has any other insights.
Yeah. And something else for those who were around in the 90s, you pointed this out in your story, Clark, that one of the advisory questions was, hey, do you citizens want to keep the ballot initiative that passed term limits on elected officials? And, you know, they said, yes, we want you to have term limits. And this was, you know, a part of a long, you know, years long back and forth with the citizens and the legislature, where the citizens passed term limits on elected officials. And right before it was set to go into effect, after a very complicated yes is no, no is yes ballot initiative, that, you know, the legislature put forth, they finally did repeal that, even though people multiple times voted saying, yes, we want to have term limits on there. So it just really underscores how seriously the, you know, the results of these are actually taken by lawmakers.
Yeah, the legislators aren't obligated in any way to, if voters approve it or disapprove it, legislature, you know, doesn't have to do anything. The only thing I would say is the ongoing aspect of this special session law that relates to the advisory question, the only ongoing thing of it that really hasn't been taken care of is the allocation of the education funding component of it. The $330 million for public schools and another $70 million for what they're calling in-demand careers that could go to colleges and universities or career technical training. That's the only ongoing thing about it where, you know, anybody would be interested in and guidance going forward. But the history of these advisory questions is really interesting. Jimmy was exactly right about that back and forth in the 1990s. And Idahoans said, yes, they want term limits. And the legislature went ahead and repealed it anyways after the fact. And so the legislature isn't beholden to any of this, and it is non-binding. But it does get interesting and pretty fascinating pretty quickly.
So then what will be done with the results of this advisory question, if anything?
I mean, that's a great question. I don't think we know. You know, the stakes seem fairly low. We know there's going to be a lot of changes in the Idaho legislature. 40 or more legislators out of the 105 will be new. And Jimmy had a really interesting article about how the support for the special session law came a lot from lame duck legislators who will not be returning in 2023 are Democrats. And so conceivably, you know, the legislative leaders in the governor's office, you know, could talk about the results of the advisory question, but nothing official happens. Nothing would be repealed. It won't introduce a new bill automatically in 2023, depending on how this goes. There's nothing official or automatic that would happen. But we are expecting huge changes in the makeup of the legislature, of legislative leadership, of the budget committees. So there will be a new look legislature starting in 2023 that will be there to keep track of.
Yeah, I just kind of view it as a big stick that, you know, the traditional Republicans who are there, Governor Brad Little, can use against this new class of much more conservative lawmakers in the House and Senate who would conceivably be trying to, you know, they've been vocal critics of, you know, this sort of spending on education, not to mention that there should have been bigger and more tax cuts and other budget cuts. So if, you know, voters with, I don't know, let's say 60% or more say, yes, we approve of this, then that's something they can point to during budget negotiations and floor debates and saying, hey, we'll push back on you next election cycle if you try to, tangle up any sort of, action in the General Assembly for, further budget cuts or repealing this education funding.
But bottom line, this is, as both of you said, an advisory question. So it really holds no power.
Correct. No official power.
It's non-binding. If you don't feel comfortable with it, just as anything else on your ballot, if you're confused or don't feel comfortable with it, you can leave it blank or you can vote however you feel. But it's non-binding. It's low stakes. And officially, whichever way Idahoans vote, nothing will happen officially. Jimmy had a great explanation about how a result could be used as a stick, as an incentive, however you want to look at it, to say, hey, Idahoans are saying that they want this carried out. We need to do that. But that's about the long and short of it, as far as I see. It's non-binding. It's only an advisory question. If you're confused, if you don't feel comfortable with it, you can skip it and move on. And that's the same for anything on your ballot, really.
All right. Appreciate both of you coming in and talking about this and giving clarity to this, because as both of you pointed out, this is unusual to see on a ballot in Idaho, so it can be quite confusing. We've been talking with James Dawson, reporter for Boise State Public Radio News, and Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun about the voter advisory question that you will see when you vote come November 8th. Remember, we want to answer your questions about voting in the upcoming midterm election. So if you have a question, go to BoiseStatePublicRadio.org and submit it there, or you can text Boise State PR to 855-670-1777 and follow the prompts, and we will answer your questions on Tuesdays right here on Idaho Matters. Thank you, both of you, for coming in today.
Thanks,
Gemma.
It was fun. Happy to do it.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.